Welcome. It's 7:07. We're gonna get going. Okay, welcome to our village board meeting, our regular village board meeting. It's Monday, October 14th. God, it's echoing. At 7:00, if I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Carji.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Hennig.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Odusi.
Here. Okay, if I can ask you to please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Dylan. Okay, so we've got two comments from Dan and Diane Lauber, and they're regarding 9D, and I'm prepared, unless there's an objection from any trustee here, to go ahead and pull the item from the agenda, and we'll just have it appear when we're ready for it to, you know, to be voted on. Okay, fair enough. Any objections from the group?
No, that's fine.
All right. So do you still want to speak? No, I didn't think so. So it got you out a little bit. Yeah, yeah, no worries, and Eric knows about it, so. Sure, thank you. Yes.
Sorry, I just have a question, because we're here as the applicant.
Yes.
We're Kaiser from McDonald's.
Okay.
Can you just clarify?
Yes, sure.
You should.
This is like last minute that we found out about any of this.
Sure, you should talk to Mr. Lauber on your way out. Your item has been, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, I'll just.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, well, welcome to River Forest. Where'd you drive in from?
I live in Flossmoor.
Oh, wow, geez, sorry about that. Take some peanuts on the way out. Yikes. Okay. Apologies. Okay, one of the neighbors, one of your neighbors of around McDonald's, meet Dan and Diane Lauber. They're interested in kind of sitting down with the administration and yourself and talking through some of ideas and issues that they might have as neighbors potentially around the sign. So I think in deference to our residents, we thought it would be good thing, a prudent thing to go ahead and postpone it and then pull it from the agenda and then address it when I think the administration and the residents are ready.
Okay.
Fair enough? Yeah, thank you. Sorry for the drive. Please don't take some peanuts on your way out. If you get hungry. All right. Okay, so up next is the elected official comments and announcements. So I will go ahead and ask Ms. Trustee Cole Connell if you wouldn't mind starting. You have nothing. Okay, very good. Trustee Hennig, anything you wanna?
I do have one thing. First, I wanna say good evening to anyone here. I wanted to share that I did attend the town hall on cannabis, marijuana use that the League of Women Voters put on.
Good.
It was a panel that gave varying perspectives on what they seen. Kimberly Lightford was there, so she gave perspective in terms of how the bill was drafted at the state level. The chief of police for Oak Park was there. Our very own, and I'm glad to see him back here, our officer Ben Ransom was there and did a very nice job representing River Forest and offering his perspective and comments in terms of his experience being our resource officer. And a point that he made, and I know it was quoted in the paper, which is good, and I think it's something we need to be mindful of. Regardless of what happens in River Forest, whether we ever get one or not, there are going to be issues of continuing the education and continuing to make sure our kids are aware of the use, and particularly as Officer Ransom expressed the concern of mixing alcohol with marijuana use and having those sort of things out there. So regardless, we're obviously going to want to continue with our resource officer in the schools and continuing doing the good stuff that he's doing. He has a great way about him, which I told him that night. He has a great way about him, so I think he's a good person in that role. So thank you for that, and thank you for representing us so well that night. So So that's it.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for going as well.
And, oh, there was a video of the event. I checked this morning. It's not available. So if people do want to see what was presented in comments, other interesting thing I'll throw out there is that they actually had the ability to survey everyone in attendance and get real-time feedback then in terms of where people in the audience maybe stood on the topic, where they thought they needed more information. I know the paper did a really good recap in terms of some of those stats if you're interested, but that's it.
Oh, great, thanks. Okay, Trustee Brennan?
Good evening. I attended, along with a handful of the other village trustees, the groundbreaking at the Sheridan of River Forest, the senior care center on Chicago and Harlem, and a bunch of the staff was there too, almost everyone. It was a really well-attended event, and I thought it, you know, showed the collaboration and the very positive relationship between the village and the developers. I assisted Commissioner Gillis, Commissioner Lisa Gillis, who's on the Sustainability Commission, in installing one of our Parkway for Pollinator gardens in conjunction with a Green Block Party a couple weeks ago, which was very fun. It is a project that's funded by grants from both ComEd and Planet Green, gardens are offered for free to all of our residents, to every block that decides to have a Green Block Party.
Nothing for me today.
Okay.
Just happy Columbus Day and or happy Indigenous Peoples Day. That's it.
Okay, thank you.
I have nothing.
Okay.
I'd like to begin with a acknowledgement of land. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on lands that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. And want to talk about the census.
Yeah.
And our meetings, we're having great meetings. So at our last meeting with residents and other community members, we broke out into subcommittees. So now we have subcommittees, thank you Jonathan for help with that, around education, around government, around faith, and
general community.
And really now targeting what our messaging needs to be in any given month, and then over the long term until and a little bit after Census Day, which is April 1st, 2020, to get people to get out and make sure that they are being counted in River Forest. And so you'll be seeing more things, and we'll look to collaborate with you on your newsletter and other ways as well. And so a couple of facts about the census and the census data and how it's used. It's used for planning for school projects and for developing adult education programs. So those are my two tidbits for today. Also wanted to just acknowledge the wonderful Fall Fun Fest that happened at Roosevelt Middle School on Friday. It's an opportunity for the kids to let their hair down on a Friday afternoon and consume as much sugar as possible in a few hours, and have a lot of activities going on and win prizes and play with silly string outside. So it was a lot of fun with hundreds of kids. I was more than happy to volunteer for that and see all the families out there. I did also want to note that there was a death in the family at Roosevelt Middle School, Mrs. Creeley, who was a teacher there, and so just want to honor her today. It was unexpected, and we're so sorry.
Thanks
for that loss.
Yep. Yeah, thank you, and thank you for reminding us of that unfortunate situation. Okay, so I have a few things. Some of it made the news before I can even get it to you, which is the METRA, our meeting with METRA, and Senator Lightfoot. That was, we had gotten together just right after our last board meeting, which was Wednesday, and then we kind of came to the agreement on Friday, and then it made the newspaper the following week. But I'm happy to report that I think, along with the residents, they're pleased with the kind of the end result, which was not only the landscaping issue, but the supposedly temporary now permanent access is going to have. I think we're going to get that resolved, and of course the sound mitigation wall and the fencing was the other major issue, which we believe we've got that solved. So thanks go out to, of course, METRA for stepping up, but more thanks goes out to our senator, who is Kimberly Lightfoot, who really stepped up and attended all the meetings and attended all the conferences as well. So thank you. The second, Julie Moeller, the chair of the Sustainability Commission, and myself and Eric met with George Strom, and we're looking at, you know, different ways to improve on our waste hauling contract. And so there's more to come on that, but it's exciting because we're trying to do more, more education about what's recyclable and what's not. And so I think there's some, I don't know if you want to add anything to it, but I think there's going to be some things coming out. Things like, you know, stickers on our bins and kind of what we'll collect more of in the future. So pretty much that's it. And then Eric and I met with several Elmhurst Hospital executives as well. They were interested in talking with us and learning more about River Forest and perhaps a relationship with them somewhere in River Forest. So we had a very good conversation, and I know you've had some additional follow-up, but I'm pleased that there are people now continue to reach out and look at our community as a place that they'd like to, you know, have development. So again, thank you to the police officers and fire who are recognizing breast cancer awareness by wearing their pink. And of course, it's also Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is purple. If you see those purple ribbons around town, it's to be aware of the domestic violence that some of our residents suffer from. And then I think the last is I participated in Columbus Day. So happy Columbus Day to our fellow Italians and all other folks that celebrate Columbus Day. So I didn't wear red, I have pink on, in honor of breast cancer. Okay, so that's all I have to report. And we'll move on to now the consent agenda. If I can get a motion to approve the, move the consent agenda A through H.
In a second. I'll move to approve the consent agenda items A through H.
Okay, well, here's second. Very good. Any comments or questions before the clerk reads the hearing? None. I'll ask the clerk to go ahead and read out loud the consent agenda.
Consent agenda A, regular village board meeting minutes, September 23rd, 2019. B, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 1425 Keystone. C, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for a heated sidewalk located at 1521 Forest. D, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 627 Forest. E, award of contract and bid to H&H Electric for the Lake and Thatcher Traffic Signal Project for $164,390.60. F, monthly department reports. G, monthly performance measurements reports. H, village administrator's report.
Okay, thank you. If I can now ask the clerk to take the vote.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yeah.
Motion passed.
Okay, very good. We have no items for a separate consideration. And item number 7A, I believe, has been removed as well. So we'll just have a motion to postpone this item and then second it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. To October 28th.
To the October 28th, yeah. Okay. It says right there.
I move to postpone consideration of the requested variation at 842 Harlem Avenue to October 28, 2019.
Okay. Already. So they just asked for more time. That's the whole purpose. So if I can get the vote on the postponing.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Hennick?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Cargi?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Okay. So moving on to unfinished business, this is regarding the no left turn on the Madison Street, which we talked about last board meeting. So if I can get a trustee to move and another to second it, and then we can discuss what the staff did to come up with this conclusion.
Motion to approve an ordinance to amend Title IX of the Village Code to prohibit left turns for eastbound traffic on Madison Street at its intersection with Keystone Avenue Monday through Friday between the hours of 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to let Eric talk about it. If you remember, this was kind of a discussion that the traffic and safety came up with in terms of just adding more police, and we kind of remanded it back to staff.
Correct. So we have an internal working committee, STAC, stands for the Staff Traffic Advisory Committee, that sat down and reviewed this item at your request. And so the group, which is comprised of all the department heads, representatives from each of the departments, sat down, looked at this, and based on the request from the resident, felt that the no left-hand turn restriction on Madison, on the Keystone, made the most sense at this point as a first step in trying to address some of the concerns from the residents. The only caveat, as you mentioned in the motion, was that it would be time restricted. So obviously a lot of that traffic is coming during the rush hour periods of 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and then 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. And those are times that are consistent throughout other parts of the village, as Jeff's memo references. So from an enforcement standpoint, it just makes it a little bit easier for the officers, some of which are here tonight, in terms of keeping those times consistent throughout town, so we don't have one that's 6:30 to 8:30, or 3:30 to 7:30 or something like that. So those will all remain the same. We did talk about there are other more permanent options we could look at in the future in the village, and that gets into discussions of speed bumps and cul-de-sacs and pork chops and things like that. And so we just didn't feel that was appropriate yet at this time. We wouldn't want to get to that part until at least we have tried this out. Additionally, the one thing we would caution on a moving forward basis is if we did, we will continue to look at this, but also then look throughout that particular corridor. So as you make one change, as we've talked about, it can have a tendency to have other effects, sometimes unintended, in other parts of the area. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I don't understand why we're doing this. First off, we didn't allow the police presence to at least see if that worked. I'm assuming there wasn't the police presence. I mean, I'm concerned that we do this all the time, where a neighbor raises a concern, we put in a traffic or parking restriction, and then there's the unintended consequences. I'm assuming there was no traffic study, so we don't know what will happen possibly if we put this in. I think we should send this back to traffic and safety. I mean, they rejected this initially. Maybe you can discuss with them why you guys decided this was the best approach, but I just think in deference to our committee system, they should have the first crack at this instead of our doing it at this point.
I am in agreement with Tom. this is William Monroe all over again, and what's the capability, and how much traffic does Thatcher hold, at rush hour? What happens to Gale? What happens, up and down the street? And again, we have a couple of examples of it in the village, and it all gets filtered onto one street on the north side of town. And I think we just need more information on it.
Weren't we supposed to do? I maybe I'm wrong about this, but I thought that we were going to do somewhat of a comprehensive traffic parking study comprehensive plan.
Right.
I thought that was going to be in there.
So parking, yes. So that's where
traffic too. I could be wrong.
That's what we're doing right now. The RFPs came back for the comprehensive traffic, I'm using the wrong words. The comprehensive parking study. So we hope to have that on for approval at the next board meeting. But I guess I'd have to go back and look at the implementation plan for the comp plan, but the a comprehensive traffic study is pretty broad in nature.
Okay. Again, I could be wrong. I had that recollection, but
I don't recall
parking.
That.
Yeah, it was parking.
It was parking. The other thing I would say, too, just as a point of context, is for the board to realize we don't. So Jeff Loster is our village engineer. He is a licensed professional engineer, but his specialization is in civil engineering. He is not a traffic engineer, and he will tell you that repeatedly if you ask him. So that's where we lean on a KLOA, for example, to come in and provide that. There is certainly a cost to do that, and so you can very easily get into the $3,000 to $5,000 range for some study and analysis every time these things come up. So I'm not saying we shouldn't or should not do that. I'm just saying that cost can get spiral out of control very quickly if where we try to do it and look at it more internally with our own just professional expertise on what we've seen that has worked and has not worked in the past. If we want to go out and rely on a third party to do that in the future, we can certainly do that. I just want to advise you of the cost for those professional services.
No, I appreciate that, Eric. The concern I have is, again, with parking, we address the symptom as opposed to looking for the cure. So the people on Keystone complain, and then I'm guessing the next people on Forest are, because water seeks its own level. You're always going to have people trying to avoid traffic backups. So are we going to do on Madison like we've done on North Avenue, where basically now every car goes on Ashland off of North Avenue? At some point, will Forest be the street that everyone cuts through on Madison? That's the concern that I have, that there isn't the holistic consideration of the problem. A neighbor complains, and then we put a sign up. That's the issue that I have.
Here, I'll defer to the board, but the Traffic and Safety Commission didn't suggest that. They suggested something very different. And so if there was a concern about, moving the problem over, I'm very concerned that the Traffic and Safety Commission didn't think about that. So that's why we remanded it back to the staff so that they could take a look at this very particular problem. But if you're suggesting that the staff, I would suggest the staff would do it, to look at a Madison Street in its entirety, then maybe that makes some sense. But to have it go back to the Traffic and Safety Commission when they couldn't even resolve that.
Why wouldn't we send it back to Traffic and Safety?
Because they already looked at that. And their conclusion was to have police presence.
Right, but I think what they were looking for, and maybe I'm wrong, I didn't listen to the meeting, but I did read the minutes, and I had the impression that they were saying that this is the incremental approach. So if increased police presence doesn't work, then we can consider something else. But I don't think it's that they just simply shrugged their shoulders and said, well, just put more police there. I think it was they didn't think that
the
first step of the no turn was the appropriate way to go.
I think there was a disagreement along with the commissioners. And so I think the way they ended it was having police presence there. And then I think we all agreed that's a very expensive way to solve a problem. And not necessarily you're going to have 100% police presence there. So it's not solving the problem. It's not really solving the resident problem.
I'd love to see the traffic and safety have the benefit of the data that's been gathered by the police presence. Because I was surprised when I saw this on the agenda. So I drove myself over there and took a look around. And I noticed that street, well, first of all, for like the 20 minutes that I was driving around that area, there was not one northbound car that turned off of Madison onto Keystone. There were maybe 8 to 10 cars that were going southbound.
Yeah.
So I didn't see the issue. It was also,
because it's during the
it was
time.
Between 4 and 6 p.m.
What?
Mm-hmm. It's also a street that has more stop signs than the other stop signs around it. So you would think that there's going to be more traffic going down Thatcher, going down Gale, going down Forest. There's a couple businesses there that could be impacted by this, including Good Earth Greenhouse and the
left in Keystone.
If you don't allow a left onto Keystone, that's just on the right, on the side of Good Earth. That's the southern Forest tip.
Western.
Tip.
So they could turn left at Forest.
Parking lot's off. Yeah, but if let's say someone, I've done that. I've parked over there before when at an event at Good Earth Greenhouse. You couldn't do that. There's also more multi-unit.
If you do it by hours, you could. So an event is most likely going to be at 7 o'clock.
No, what if you're just shopping?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with any of what you all are saying. All we're trying to say that the residents believe that there is a high level of traffic that goes through on Keystone during a period of time. This was to address, you know, their concern. And I know we all try to address residents' concern. We just let Dan and Diane Lauber go out with the McDonald's people so that they can resolve their problems. Well, I mean, so we could either remand this back to the Traffic and Safety Commission for it to look at a holistic approach, which I don't have a problem with that, but I just think we're kind of back and forth.
But I mean, I think, you know, anybody who lives off of a major east-west is going to see a lot of traffic. You know, you got traffic coming off a Division, you got kind of on Augusta, you know, people take Augusta to Williams so they get across Chicago Avenue. I mean, people who live in that neighborhood could say the same thing. So again,
we don't have any left turns coming off North Avenue between Lathrop and Bath.
You know,
that's right.
I'm Ashland.
Look at that, Ashland.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. And then it's from Ashland on.
So, again, you know.
I mean, we could do that.
I guess what I'd like to see is the entire Madison corridor. And it could be staff generated. But I would like to see a plan for the area instead of just dealing with this particular problem.
Well, and isn't that what our comprehensive plan talks about, right? So that as we're doing TIF work on North and Madison, right, as we're looking out, you know, 10 years or so, that we are thinking about what kind of cul-de-sac, pork right. chop things,
right.
And that at some point when we're ready, we're going to delve into that and right. make some big decisions around that.
That's correct.
On North Avenue and Madison.
You're right, Erica, because right. when down near Lutheran Family Services, that was one of the things that they talked about was to get more parking was to close off.
Right, just like they do in Elmwood Park. So there's no, I mean, I don't think there's an argument here that there's a need for, you know, something broader, but it's going to, over time, going to create that broader strategy. What I think we were all trying to do last time we met was saying there's apparently a fairly decent resident concern that they came to Traffic and Safety. They had concerns, and Traffic and Safety was at somewhat of a disagreement. I don't know,
and
crossroads.
Living off of Harlem Avenue in Lemoyne, and we've got the same
yep.
no left turn between 4 and 6
yep.
and 7 and 9.
Yep.
Yes, I live next to Harlem Avenue, so I know to expect more traffic, but it's also being safe around that. So what can we do to make it safer? And if the residents are complaining about an intensity and people off of Harlem, they really go after it sometimes, you know, and it's not pleasant. And so to be able to curb that a little bit, and then the way I've seen it work too, is that when you put restrictions like that, the police every now and then, they want to try to get people, you know, like, get citations and tickets and things like that. And so they're going to be there anyway now to make an enforcement of it.
Right.
Well, and my feeling on this too is, I mean, I appreciate the concern of you make this change and it's going to push it somewhere else. But the reality is, whether professional studies it or not, sometimes you just don't know until you put it into practice. So to me, I feel like this is a low-cost way to test what this does to traffic flow and traffic patterns. I'm not sure what we would do in terms of evaluation to see, is it being effective, is it not, what's it doing to the other streets, but at some point I think you sometimes just have to do it to just see where it goes. My other feeling in listening to the meeting at the Traffic and Safety Commission is that there really is kind of a dual concern with the residents. It is the folks coming down and the increased traffic from their perception, but it's also the speed of traffic that's coming down. And so where I think some thought the police presence, whether it's a live body sitting there or whether it's the decoy car every so often, that would at least help the speeding issue. So in some ways, I feel that you maybe, at least in the beginning, need a combination of the two. I know, Tom, when we talked at one point, you mentioned you felt that having that decoy car by your street seemed to alleviate some of the issues that were going on. And so as we retrain some of these bad behaviors,
perhaps continuing with our first recommendation at the last meeting of having a decoy. I realize having an actual police officer is going to be too classy too often, but occasionally have them there. And then with this left turn, I think it's worth trying without putting out potentially thousands of dollars for another study that they may come back with this recommendation and we're still going to have unintended consequences.
Right. Or that might change over in 5 years.
Right. Right. Might change depending on development, to your point. Yes.
Right. You know what a pork chop is?
No, I'm curious.
Oh, okay.
But you know,
other than
the
hairstyle.
Okay. Well, it's not a hairstyle. Right. It's, you know, at the end of, if you go to Forest at North Avenue.
That's only a half pork chop.
That's only a half a pork chop. Right.
Oh.
They have pork chops go like that.
Oh.
I don't know how. I guess the bone. I don't know. I don't get the whole thing. But.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Right.
There you go.
Gotcha.
It looks like a T-bone.
Why don't they call it a T-bone?
All right. That's what it
gotcha.
Is. That's when I learned
butterfly.
It.
Thank you.
The butterfly pork chop, right.
So
all right, but that's
not to belabor this too much, but I'm just curious if Chief O'Shea has anything to say about what they've gathered. Because it's only been 2 weeks that you've had a police presence and that sign there collecting, you know, warning about the speed limit, collecting information.
Well, based on the direction that the president gave us at the last meeting, we held off, I believe, on some of those recommendations that had come from the Traffic and Safety Committee. They had it brought back into the STAC meeting. But as I shared with Administrator Palm, we did have the decoy car there on several occasions. We also had the sign up there for a couple days. We had some cloudy days, and as you know, it's solar powered. We have to get it back for a full charge. And then we also had some officer enforcement there. Similar to your observations, we didn't see the need for pork chops, half pork chops, cul-de-sacs at this time, speed bumps at this time. And we sort of looked back and brought it back to the STAC meeting, just sort of the most basic and from a cost standpoint, the cheapest way and consistent with what we've done in other parts of town, as Trustee Bachner has mentioned, and also we have at Lathrop and Madison, is that no left turn, which people should be used to seeing in River Forest already, between those rush hour times. We're not seeing, you know, one of the issues that came up, if you remember those that mentioned that they had read the minutes, is that the kids were playing in the street or near the street. Now, that's a whole separate issue in itself,
right.
But I do believe we should all be safe near the street, maybe not necessarily playing in the street where cars are coming off of Madison. But the officers haven't reported any accidents in the area since we've last spoke. They haven't reported seeing high pedestrian, bicycle, joggers in that area. But they do feel that during the rush hour times, we're, and this is new since Forest Park really completed their bump outs, I guess is the best way to describe them, all along Madison, from they go from probably about their the train tracks all the way east into Harlem, that we do have the backups that occur. And those backups do go back to Forest and Keystone. And so this would be a basic way, and I think as Trustee Hennig said, maybe a simple way to see, maybe that will work. Maybe that will be, maybe not all, but some of the residents' expectations. Comprehensive study is also something that would be applicable. Everyone's ideas are great across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Good discussion.
Well, I don't know.
All right.
From my opinion, I'm inclined to go ahead with the stop signs. What's being recommended from the village staff?
No left turn.
Left turn.
Oh, I'm sorry. No left turn.
No stop
signs.
No
that was
stop.
The other thing. Okay. Correct. That's true. Because, and I'm not opposed to doing a study, but usually the studies take a lot longer. So if we end up sending it, it's going to be a while before we probably hear from either traffic study safety commission. Or whoever the consultant's going to be to work and produce whatever they're going to produce. So, hey, how much is a sign cost, or is, in terms of no left turn?
Not too much.
Okay. Well, I figured in comparison to
we do some of them in house, some of them we out. Yeah. But
well, I'm just
hundreds of dollars.
Well, I'm just saying in comparison then to a commission study and do it instead of doing one by one. Let's just do it the right way,
mm-hmm.
and do the comprehensive study all through Madison, which I agree doing. And in the meantime, well, we have something that we can try out and see if it works.
But my concern is it's not so much the cost of the sign. It's more the unintended consequences. That so now we're going to be burdening people on Forest or on Gale. You know, I mean, traffic's going to go somewhere. And so are they going to come back? Again, I just relate it back to the parking. That we get a complaint and we put a sign up. And there's really no thought process. It's just simply someone complains and we put a sign up. So that's the issue that I have. I don't know that we know what the consequences are going to be. Probably they're not going to be severe. I mean, we're not talking about people dying, but
right.
I just don't know that we should burden other people until we know what those burdens are.
The William Monroe was 1 month. You know, because it was summer, we only met once, you know, during summer. So from the time we did it in whatever, July, what was on the agenda in August, that the people in Monroe were complaining about it. So that's, you know, that's how it's going to handle.
Yeah, well, and we, you know, we took care of it. I mean, it's not rocket science. I'm not disagreeing that there are, you know, when I think, again, Madison Street being what it is, it's going to change. I think this is something to give to the residents. I don't see it as a big issue. But all right, well, let's take a vote, see where we're at. Never know.
Here we go.
Go ahead.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
No.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
No.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
No.
President Odusi?
Yes. 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 Okay.
4-3, that was exciting.
Wow, I got my tie. All right. All righty. Okay, let's move on. Okay, so we're at new business and 9A. So this is motion. If I can get a motion in a second, and then we'll go ahead and talk through the dates on the amendment.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an ordinance authorizing the execution of the First Amendment to the Second Amended and Restated Development Agreement for the Lake and Lathrop Lake Street and Lathrop Avenue.
Second.
Thank you.
And before we start the discussion, I'd like to recuse myself since I have a conflict of law, a common law. Conflict because my law firm represents both School District 200 and School District 90, and since this involves TIF funds, I'm going to be consistent in recusing myself and asking the clerk not to call my name for the vote.
All right, thank you. All right, so I thought the best way to handle this is to just give you a high level of some of the changes, the dates. It's really what it is. It's just dates, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, Greg, you want to go through it or
Eric? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. So if you take a look at pages 4 and 5 of the ordinance approving the First Amendment, you'll see a table that we included that have the current deadlines and the new deadlines. We thought presenting the information in this way would be the easiest way to understand exactly what's changing. So there's 3 deadlines to be changed: permit application deadline, construction commencement deadline, and project completion deadline. With regard to permit application, it would move from mid-June out to December 15th. Part of the issue at Lake and Lathrop was a tenant who refused to leave the property willingly after the plan development was approved. That eviction case went to trial. Eric testified at the eviction trial. And the tenant filed a number of motions and really tried to gum up the works, which prevented the developer from beginning the full demolition of the property, which was a precondition to then getting the permit application in and moving forward. Second, they're proposing to move the construction commencement deadline back from mid-December to the later of May 1st of 2020, or 30 days after the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency approves the remediation action plan for the project. The reason that the construction commencement deadline is being pushed back relates to the permit submittals. It takes a while for large projects to be reviewed when all of the engineering and technical plans are submitted. So when you move one of these dates, the other dates flow from them. Further, as the board is well aware, there is environmental contamination on site that needs to be remediated. There's a 4-step process through the IEPA for approval of plans where they will eventually recognize that the property has been cleaned up so that the proposed mix of uses, commercial, retail, first floor, residential up, is healthy and okay to do on the property. So rather than have a hard date of May 1st, if the IEPA takes a while to approve that, this date would move to get so that the developer doesn't have to come back if the IEPA gives a couple rounds of comments, which often happens in these cases. And finally, with regard to project completion, we're moving that date back, I believe, by an equal amount of time, given the change in permit application and construction start dates to November 1st of 2021.
All right. Okay. So, any questions regarding the dates? I guess that's the big, because that's the only thing that's changed on this whole contract.
Can I actually ask a question first, since I see that representative the developers are here? Can we get an update on where things are at with the project?
Sure. Are you Artie or someone from Sedgwick? What Trustee Hennick has asked is just give an update on where you're at with the current project.
With your loans, with potential buyers, with architectural plan, the plans needed to submit your permit, are they ready to go, to be ready for the December deadline?
We're evolving the plans as we speak. We are taking the next key step in that process is doing soil borings. So we did soil borings for environmental purposes. We have to do soil borings now for the structural strength of the soil, for the weight of the building. So that process is underway. Sales, we've just recently got a new contract. We have a couple others in the works, and so a few others we think will be coming down the line. So we've seen some recent activity on sales.
So how many contracts do you have currently?
Total in place right now, 5, but we feel like we should have one or two more here short term and a few more down the road because there's various things in the pipeline to generate more sales. Anything else?
So as far as the plans that will need to be submitted for the building permit for this December date,
right,
are those plans ready to go?
No, we still have 2 months to prepare those, but we have the base work for that done. We're awarding the consulting team here shortly. We need the soil borings to finish that up, but at least on the architectural side, design side, schematic design side, we've got that foundation well set. So so we are launching forward.
And in terms of your financing, I know part of when we had the changes to the RDA back in March was to get the loan for the bridge loan to do the remediation and the demolition. You've been able to approve that funding?
We're in that process. They actually will require the RDA to be approved to finalize that, but that should come together kind of simultaneously to allow that to happen. So yes, it's
and what sort of time frame are you anticipating that's going
to
take?
I think we were hoping we wouldn't have to do an appraisal, but I believe we have to do an appraisal, so that's going to drag it out a little bit. But we
do have to do an appraisal?
Yeah, just as a typical due diligence step of the lender. But we think it's instead of, we were hoping in the next couple of weeks, it'd probably be go into November a little bit to finalize that.
So then November, because I see that demolition has been paused at the moment, so nothing's going to happen until into November to continue some of the demolition
the
and remediation?
So we went from demolition kind of being what we call critical path, where that step was critical to move on to the next thing. Once we started remediation, that now became the critical path. So we don't anticipate the demo being a problem in the overall timeline. We certainly won't get into next critical path will be this middle of the drawings on mid-December, which is the new date now being proposed. So we will be working with the company to trigger demo as quickly as we can based on some definition on the financing.
But for now, it's on hold until that's... nothing more is going to happen on site until you finish with your financing.
We will see what we can do, but it may be idle for a couple of weeks, yes.
Any further questions for?
I have to say this has been kind of a constant process where you guys continually blow your dates, come in, ask for more time. I understand this one, but I have to say that this is probably the last extension that I can agree to. We got to get this thing built.
No, understood.
People River Force have waited long enough, and it just seems that there's always a new excuse. And so I don't want any more excuses going forward. Truly, act of God next time, or else I'm voting no.
Appreciate that, and if I may, Eric has sent that message very clearly. So, people are sending that message. We're quite aware of the concern and the need to move forward.
Right. Yeah. And it's
All right, thank you.
Pretty clear. Thanks. Okay, any other further questions regarding dates or?
I just want to, to Tom's point, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if this happens again, if this happens with like the December 15th, that new deadline, or the deadline for May 1st, even given the parameters of the 30 days, do we think that we're prepared to pull this back? And is that our plan B?
It is.
Just want to make sure.
Yes.
That we're thinking.
That is that. Exactly why we did what we did in the last agreement, to agree to, you know, move ahead with demolition and remediation, knowing that we would always, you know,
yeah,
have a clawback.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Glad to hear that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead and take the vote, please.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Evidently, yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Hennick?
No.
Okay, very good. Passed. So we've got an approved contract here on our end. And when, I think the message is pretty clear. We're going to have to get this done, and I'm confident that we've got the team to get it done. So thank you for being here, and we'll move on to the next item. So 9B, which is the motion, if I can get a motion to accept the Village Comprehensive Annual Financial Plan report.
I move that we accept the Village's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for the fiscal year ending April 30th, 2019.
Second.
All right. So, Rosie, or you want to, or the, our auditors? Yep.
Kimberly Marshall from,
yep,
BKD.
Okay. Hi, Kimberly. Welcome.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks so much for having me here today. I just want to start off and, you know, thank the board. We appreciate the opportunity to continue to work with the Village, and also just want to thank Eric, Rosie, and Kiki for all their help during the audit process. So we do have two deliverables. One is your financial statements, which is your comprehensive annual financial report as of April 30th, 2019. The other is a smaller document. This is our SAS 114, or our post-audit communication letter. So I'm going to go through some highlights in the financial statements. This is a very large report, so I'm just going to highlight some areas. But of course, as always, if there's any questions, you know, please feel free to interrupt me and just let me know. It's just important for us to obviously address any concerns or questions you might have. So starting in the report, I just want to highlight on the tab that's labeled financial. This is your independent auditor's report. This is our opinion. Yep. And just highlighting under the management responsibility paragraph, it does highlight that it's management's responsibility to prepare the fair presentation of the financial statements, and the auditor's responsibility as your auditors is really to express an opinion on the financial statements. So for 2019, on the second page of the independent auditor's opinion, this is a clean, unmodified opinion, similar to the past. Right below that, you do see an emphasis of matter paragraph, and this does relate to an accounting pronouncement that was required to be implemented for fiscal year 19. This is GASB 75, and this is accounting for post-employment benefits, which you'll hear me refer to as OPEB. So this was a required implementation, and did have a significant impact on your government-wide financial statements. This was talked about last year, so hopefully not a surprise. This does is similar to what happened in 2016 when GASB 68 was implemented. Net pension liabilities were recorded for IMRF, for police and fire. And this is a similar liability that was required to be put on your government-wide financial statements. And again, it relates to other post-employment benefits. So before we get into some of the numbers, I just want to highlight right after the opinion is the management's discussion and analysis. This is the MD&A. This is really important to highlight, as although this financial statement is rather large, this MD&A is a much smaller document and does a great job of highlighting current year activity as well as comparing to the prior year. There's a number of tables as well as a number of explanations that really help draw, again, the changes that happened during the year and important things to be aware of. Following the MD&A is the start of your basic financial statements. Just want to highlight that your government-wide statements start on page 22. It goes through 25. And on page 23, it does highlight your ending net position for the year. For governmental activities, this was a deficit of $7.6 million. And again, just want to highlight that deficit, again, is a result of implementing GASB 68 as well as GASB 75 for these net pension liabilities. Your business type activities, which is your water fund, has an ending net pension of $11.3 million to arrive at an ending net pension combined at $3.8 million. Mm-hmm. On page 24 is your statement of activities. It does provide a look at government-wide what your revenues and expenses are. It does show at the bottom the implementation effect of GASB 75. It shows that there was a restatement to the beginning balance, again, that was putting on the OPEB liability, and that totaled to a decrease in your net position of $3.3 million. To give you a little bit better news, on page 26 is your fund level financial statements. This does show your general fund. It shows your ending general fund balance at a healthy balance of $9.8 million. It also shows your unassigned balance at $5 million. Mm-hmm. And then it's just important to point out that 63%, that your fund balance is 63% of your annual expenditures for the fund. GFOA recommends that you should never go below 16% or 2 months worth of expenditures. So this does give you comfort that the village is staying well above that. So those are the highlights I wanted to cover in the annual financial statements. Any questions, though, before I move to the shorter document, which is our post-audit communication letter?
Maybe, again, just one clarification, too, on the OPEB number. So the OPEB is something we've been aware of for a while now. In fact, some of the contracts we negotiated with our union several years ago, probably two, three cycles now, actually, dealt with the matter of retiree health insurance and trying to help shrink that number over the long term. Even that being said, there are just some inherent things and dollars and cents that come along with that that you can't negotiate your way out of, right? There's just the recognition of what that value is something that GASB has come back and said it has to be in our financial wide statements. That being said, although it is a large number, I just wanted to let the board know that I, from a staff perspective, it's not something that I think we need to be overly concerned about. We're going to continue to monitor, but more as a product of something they just want you to record on your books, that ultimately that liability is not something that would ultimately get paid out, because we're not going to pay those benefits back out to the employees. Even though when I retire and I can qualify, I will have insurance and I can go ahead and get that benefit, but I have to pay 100% of that.
Mm-hmm. So the other document I just wanted to highlight is what we call our post-audit communication letter. This is where if there were any audit journal entries that were identified or any internal control recommendations, these would be part of this document. Similar to the prior year, there were no audit journal entries. There were no deficiencies in the internal controls that were identified as part of the audit process. So again, just want to acknowledge the hard work that the management team does to help ensure that there's a appropriate internal control structure in place. In addition, I just want to highlight at the end of this letter, too, it does, under other matters on page 3, highlight additional GASBs to implement over the next few years. None of them have similar implications as we saw with GASB 68 or GASB 75, meaning similar type of liabilities that would need to get added. The one I just want to highlight is GASB 83. This is certain asset retirement obligations. Just to be aware of if there are scenarios where, such as like a water tower, would, when that needs to get disposed of, there's potential where there's additional liabilities to retire that type of asset. So this new GASB requires municipalities to take a look at those type of assets and potentially record a liability on the government-wide financial statements related to retiring those type of assets. So it's just important to start to think about what will work with your management team if it's applicable, because there might be some need to involve an engineer in helping develop those type of estimates. Any questions or concerns that I can help answer?
Pretty straightforward. Pretty straightforward.
No, I just want to again compliment Rosie and Kiki. Yep. Did a really an excellent job. Certainly their first time around here. They're audit, but
not your first.
First here.
Not my first here.
No, yeah. Not your first round.
I also want to commend Kiki for coming on board and jumping right on in. You're a good leader.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good.
And not very nice.
That's an introduction.
Very good. Any questions from the trustees? It's, I think, all good news. It sounds like from our auditor, which is always good. Glad to hear that from a financial auditor. Any other further questions or that anybody has? If not, then we will take the vote on accepting it. So,
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Yeah. So again, thank you on behalf of the village trustees, myself, on doing a very good comprehensive job on this report. You could tell there's quite a bit of work that's done. And I'm very pleased with, you know, the financial health of our community. I think we're at least good 10 years into a healthy budget. So it's good. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to my next, which I lost. Discussion of traffic control at the intersection of Park and Thomas. Where's that at? Lost my little, here it is.
C.
Yep, sorry, yep. So this is just a discussion. So who wants to discuss this?
The village engineer and public works director are on long vacations this weekend.
Okay.
So I'm
you're here to discuss
acting a public works director and engineer. Yeah, this came up through a resident comment back when we did the Safe Routes to School study. Obviously, that was talk about comprehensive traffic analysis. There it was, right? So we went and looked at all the stop signs, yield signs, traffic measures throughout town to allow students, primarily allow students to have a safe passageway to school. A resident had brought up a concern about the stop signs that were put in at Park and Thomas, and there was discussion about that at the various points along the way. Right now they are on Park Avenue as opposed to Thomas. A resident had brought up a concern that they thought maybe it would make more sense to have them at the intersection at Thomas, so you would go straight through on Park, citing some public safety concerns. We've discussed those concerns with the police chief and the fire chief and their departments, and at this point they're comfortable with the existing layout and placement of those stop signs. And so we're not recommending any changes to the study. But if you look at Jeff's memo, you know, your options moving forward would be to leave the revised stop sign locations in place, put it back to traffic and safety for further discussion in 2020. You could vote to change the intersection back. You could make it a four-way stop instead of a two-way stop. And again, return this back to traffic and safety for further discussion. Again, our original intent was to not make any stop sign changes throughout town for a year until after this had been in place for a while. And certainly we would put this on the list for part of our postmortem analysis after a year. But if you want to change it, we can do that as well.
Yeah, I think a couple things. I think that came, Bob, you might have had the same resident. So
I didn't have it from a resident. I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
Oh, there's okay. You had it from a public official.
Who suggested that wasn't the right place because that's the road that, you know, to get to the north side of town. So,
right.
That was his input into it. So.
Right. And then I had a resident almost, tackled me. I'm like, what? And he's not, they don't even live on, Park Avenue. But his observation, he's a longtime resident. His observation was, why would you put it going down Park, given that you're, where fire trucks go down, and, why don't you put it on the Thomas side? And I went down it, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know why it's on Park. I'm sure there's a good reason for it. So I brought it up and then heard that you had another issue. So here, if the fire officials and the police officials think there's no, you know, doesn't give you any more convenience, and stopping is fine, then that's, you know, maybe that's really the answer to it, is that our officials, our chiefs, don't believe that causes any major issues. And so, resident, don't be concerned about it.
I'd be happy
to say that to the resident. Oh, by the
I'm not sure I'm clear what the resident's
he felt
point is.
He felt because you're going down Park, and that's where the trucks, fire trucks go down. And so you stop at Park, and then you stop again at Thomas, and then you stop again like two blocks later. So his point is, if the fire trucks have to go through, then the stop signs are on the Thomas side and versus the Park side. And so it clears the way.
What is that hindering, though?
Just in case there's a fire truck that has to go down, they use Park.
So is the resident concerned that there's perhaps a car now stopped at the stop sign that's going to interfere with?
Or go vice versa. So go down Thomas and the fire truck's coming down Park.
So you don't have to stop.
You don't stop on
Thomas.
You
wouldn't necessarily. Thomas, you don't have to stop at Park.
Right.
And so the concern was if the fire truck is coming through.
Right.
And this person is coming in that direction, that was the concern.
Yeah. So why not just switch it and have the stop sign on Thomas?
It could be true at any intersection.
Except on Park Avenue, that's the road that our emergency vehicles take to get to the north end of town.
This was a concern that I actually raised during the
You sure did, and I remember that. Do you understand? Do you see, get it? The stop sign's kind of, if it was on Thomas, then people would normally stop.
So it's belt and suspenders.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
But I do think that we should let it play out. I mean, I don't remember if it was this board or the last board that voted for it, but, you know, I mean, we raised the concern with the traffic guy. He had an answer. I don't remember what it was. But he did have a response, and I think that the plan of letting this play out for a year makes sense.
And that's cool with me, Tom. And again, given that Chief Bowman says that's not a problem for you, you're going to be very cautious coming down the Park, and, you know.
Only there are lights and sirens, too. So
I didn't want to state the obvious.
But how many accidents do we have? Do we have any?
Are there accidents on Lake?
Well, not that particular intersection, but do we have accidents that hit a moving truck with lights on it?
Viaducts count?
Yeah, or, you know what I mean? They take that.
All right. Case closed. All right. Fair enough. That's it. Then we've had the conversation. I agree with Tom.
Sure.
Let's wait a year and have another conversation.
Considering.
All right. Okay. All righty. All right, so McDonald's is gone, and now we're up.
Oh, well, they're still there. They're,
people be
able to. I hope they took peanuts.
To the tape.
Yeah.
They come tomorrow morning. They'll still get your
coffee.
Hopefully
you took some peanuts on your way home. All right, so let's move on to an update on the senior snow removal program.
Correct. So you recall at our previous meeting, we had a settlement agreement on a matter, and we, at that time, had pledged that we were going to take $10,000 and set that aside. We did those micro grants, if you remember, and then we said we were going to set aside some money for a senior snow removal program, excuse me. So we're just giving you just a real brief update on that. That continues to move forward. Sarah from my office has been working on putting together the application. We're going to take a similar approach that we did with a similar program that we have for just lost my train of thought. The seniors on a sewer backflow prevention program. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. So we had gotten some money through the Community Foundation maybe about 5-7 years ago, where we had a couple seniors in town that didn't, you know, we have that program in place that the village provides a subsidy for a sewer backup backflow preventer, but that only covers in some cases $4,000 or $5,000. Those installations can run up to about $10,000. So it was the grant allowed for the basically to fill the hole and complete the loop, so that the senior didn't have to come out of pocket anything to pay for that backflow prevention device. At that time, what we used was as a method to kind of draw the line on who would qualify and who wouldn't. Obviously, these are financial hardships, and we used the the Cook County Assessor Senior Freeze Program as the mechanism by which to kind of draw that line. So if you qualify for the Senior Freeze, which means you're not hitting a certain income level, then you would go ahead and be eligible for the program. So it's an easy way for staff to implement the program, because if you're getting the Senior Freeze, then it's, again, an easy way to implement that. we would certainly, in this particular case for this program, not limit it to that. That would be our baseline. But if other people come in and have hardships, maybe they are not senior citizens, maybe they're disabled of some way, shape, or form, we would take all that into consideration and have a conversation. So in this case, we are certainly trying to cast the net to be a little bit wider and being a little bit more inclusive as opposed to looking at it and, you know, cutting people off. You know, we want to try to bring more people into this program.
So just a question. How much service do we get for that amount of money? So, I mean, if we have, if we have a heavy winter, what happens if we've now committed to doing this and the funds have run out? What happens?
Right, so that, you know, this is our first go foray into this. We do know that the amount of people on the senior freeze list is low, so it's around 12.
Yeah.
So it's to me, it's a manageable number. Now, that may be a little bit higher if we find other people that are have a hardship or something else that we hadn't thought of. But it's that to me is certainly a manageable number by which to work from. And it would only cover the public sidewalk and the front step walkway into the home. So that the other way we look at it is, typically speaking, folks like this may be more susceptible, vulnerable to needing the services of the fire department or public safety. So there is a, you know, kind of a backdoor way into also providing a public benefit to this, to ensuring that our employees have a safe passageway back into the home if they have to get there. But this will be something that we'll, Trustee O'Connell will have to just monitor and look at it on an ongoing basis every year and report back, and that'll be part of our budget process moving forward.
Yes.
And to make sure that people with disabilities understand that they have access to this as well, it might make sense to change the name of it so it's not just senior citizen.
Seniors, yeah, as well, those with disabilities.
Yeah.
Sure.
In one way or another.
I mean, because even then, it's probably far and few between.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if we're truly opening this up to.
Yep, and we are. So yep. If there's a certain, if you just wanted to say senior citizens and persons with disabilities, or if there's something else you'd recommend, we're happy to do that. That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do that.
And do you have an estimate on the residents with disabilities?
That
I know you have 12 of seniors, but
I don't.
Okay. I'm just.
Yeah, we'll need to look at that. But okay. I mean, if it's seniors with disabilities, it's mm-hmm. kind of.
Okay.
I mean, just any sure. disabilities, I think, opens it up a little bit. But something you need to look at.
Mm-hmm. Especially yeah. even how low the number is, do we have a sense of what it would cost extra for the driveway? Because I think for most people in River Forest, you drive into your garage. And so I think that would be, although I understand the point you make, but
mm-hmm.
I think the true benefit would be from the garage to the back door. For given the way River Forest is structured, I mean, most people don't park it for their house.
Right. Certainly, we could do that if you want to open.
Not even have a car.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I would just say, as we go into this for the first time, to start a little bit smaller.
Your eyes,
you know,
and then work your way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're gonna probably mold it to what makes sense for our seniors and those with disabilities. I think is a good add. This is. You know my feeling on this. I mean, this is just something that most municipalities actually offer it. You know, so we're a little bit behind the eight ball.
No, I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. So it's something I think is, you know, our seniors are not looking for a handout; they're looking for a helping hand, literally. So this is a helping hand.
And we would be utilizing contractors to do this. And I've already talked to at least one of them who said they would be willing to take on some additional clients to do that.
Great. All right, so any other comments? I don't want to cut off. Okay, super. Then it sounds like it's a great plan, and you know, as we move along, I'm sure we'll tweak it too. All right, I think that it ends our regular session. We do have an executive session, so I'd ask to adjourn into executive session. Or adjourn the meeting and move to executive session.
Discuss the appointment. Employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees at the village, the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the village, including whether a particular parcel should be acquired, the setting of price for sale or lease of property owned by the village, litigation involving the village that is pending.
All right, great.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennig.
Yes.
Eight. Give yourself a couple minutes.
12.
All right.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee
Hennig.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President
Hughes. So, one quick item. We are going to be hiring a police officer in the police department. And in the past, what we have done and has worked out to our advantage is we've gone to do 1 to 2 pre-hires in the department. So, basically, what we're doing is we're hiring over our authorized staffing allotment. And that's really done for a couple of reasons. One, we're constantly having conversations with colleagues about it. It's just becoming more and more difficult to find candidates for these positions and ones that are getting through all their training with the department. And so more people are failing out of their field training and sometimes the academy. And so we're looking, the point being is sometimes when you hire, let's say, 3 people, you may only get 1 or 2 of them to even get through the process. And certainly there's always the possibility of retirements within the department, other separations. And so we would prefer to be in a position of having of strength in our human resources perspective in the police department, as opposed to being in the rears or kind of chasing from behind. And so we've done this in the past. It's been well received by the board. So I just want to float that tonight and see if you had any concerns with that or need more information. But we would then ask the Fire and Police Commission to hire up to 3 new officers.
So is that just done through public notices out?
So there's a list that's already been created. So the Fire and Police Commission puts together an eligibility list. I believe those are 2-year lists. And I think we're at least a third of the way through that list already. There is a possibility we may exhaust the list this go around and have to retest.
Is that a test we administer, or is it generally? I mean, is it specific to River Forest, or is it candidates for a bunch of different suburbs?
No, just River Forest.
And the candidates recognize they're on that list? Or?
What's that? Sorry.
Do the candidates recognize that they're on that list?
Yes, I mean they've tested here. They filled out an application. They're now waiting to for the next step. And so the next steps would be they would do background examinations. They would be re-interviewed by the Fire and Police Commission. If they get tentative approval from the Fire and Police Commission, they have to do a psych evaluation. All the other pre-screening things of that nature.
Are there quote unquote like veteran police officers?
There's a limit on when you can become a certified law enforcement officer, and the age is 34. So if you're somebody who's working in another department, I guess you technically could, but I don't think our BFPC accepts lateral transfers either past a certain point.
Okay.
So, or if lateral transfers at all, lateral transfers are kind of tricky.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a whole different process. The whole BFPC process is statutorily defined where they're given discretion. The BFPC establishes their rules and regulations with regard to the hiring. But we couldn't just advertise tomorrow and try to hire 3 people. It all has to go through the BFPC.
And so just a quick thing. So we have the resignations. There's sort of the one spot that it needs you still. And I understand what you're saying, that they may not all, when it comes down to it, stick. But say they do. Say, I mean, say we're happy with all.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at with other officers potentially moving on, or what happens in that case?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to get into specifics in open session, but we do have other people that are eligible to retire or have the years of service to retire, maybe not necessarily pull their pension at this time, but can have enough years of service to qualify for a pension when their age meets the qualification.
Has there ever been an instance where we overhired?
Yes.
Yeah. What did we do?
Well, we've done this twice previously in the last couple years.
I remember doing it before. I just don't remember if there's been, what happens if we hire three guys, but we only end up needing two?
Right, so then we would be overstaffed for a period of time, yep. So that's,
a motion to, what do you
We're looking for a consensus, and then we would
hire three.
Correct. We would put it.
He's just seeking a consensus at this time. There's no action item.
Okay.
All right. So is everyone okay with doing adding three?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good. That's all we need.
That's it.
Second.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.